effect summarizing the various elements of bottom of pyramid marketing, you saw how seva through collective farming and through cultivating the women communities brought about positive change in their projects in Kutch region. Now, very interestingly, the World Poverty Clock has shared this data that because today there's so much dynamism, enterprises coming in, if you see cell phone usage, the poorest of the poor have cell phones. So the reach is very deep. So as per the World Poverty Clock, almost 40 people per minute are coming out of poverty, especially in countries like India. So which gives you an idea of the World Poverty Clock, which shows this data where in a changing India, 40 people per minute are coming out of poverty, which really gives you an idea of the potential of this bottom of pyramid segment. But it has to be weighed with the whatever business strategies adopted out here has to be weighed with the pros and cons, and it has to be a collaborative effort, and understanding and assessment of the market has to be very, very strong. So now we are in an environment where understanding what bottom of the pyramid needs has become easier, because whether it is Jio in India, whether it is Safaricom in parts of Africa, these are the mobile services which have managed to really penetrate the markets and even the bottom of the pyramid, below poverty line segments. So for companies to reach a customer, the bottom last mile customer, has become that much easier. Technologically, you can reach easily. You can see the responses, understand what their responses would be, what their needs and desires are. So bridging of this communication can really help you understand what strategy you should be using, what are the changing patterns among this segment. So for example, when we talk about microfinance, or when we talk about the support model, now look at a company like Xiaomi, which we know has these budget phones. Now, giving you an idea of bottom of pyramid appetite. A few years ago, Xiaomi managed to sell more than 1 lakh phones in less than 10 seconds on an Indian platform. So gives you an idea of how the appetite is and the changing mindsets which can help you to tap into this segment. Having said that, there is a strong resistance to any kind of disruption. So even when Grameen Bank entered, they would have encountered small borrowers. They would have encountered resistance because there was this comfort zone and this mentality that we are just going to go to the traditional money lender. We do not understand this system. We don't understand what this institutional borrowing and repayment is. For so many generations, we have gone to XYZ money lender and dealt with him. Even though he may be fleecing you, you may become completely sold to him. But changing that mindset, is there is a huge inertia and resistance to that. So it's very important that one uses the appropriate model to be able to tap into and break into these inertia areas, because especially at the bottom of the pyramid, anything, they don't have too much experience with goods and services as other income groups have. So the slightest change is a huge novelty factor for them, huge disruption for them. So it's important to understand how you can use, whether it's a fee-for-service model, employment model, how you can use these different models to reach these to make sure that your enterprise is reaching the beneficiary. So, for example, in for employment model, the Danish ice cream company, which is Fanway. So, for example, the Danish ice cream company Fanmilk use the employment model to break into the bottom of the pyramid. So, they started selling ice cream in West Africa, parts of several countries of West Africa, by getting these people to buy these ice cream, these bicycles, vending ice cream, vending bicycles, prepay for these ice creams, and then go to the last point distribution and take your product to the last point of sale and distribution for, and hence you are creating employment for people in the immediate region who are part of the community, who are probably purchasers of your ice cream products themselves too. They know they understand the geography, they understand the socio-economic dynamics of this region. So they are, and also you are providing support to them in terms of bicycle repairs, in terms of various trainings, etc. So you're bringing good to the community, and at the same time, you are penetrating a region which might not be easy to penetrate for typical sales recruits. So there are various models which can be used. Now, think of a Tata Group. Now, a Tata Group is a company which has a lot of reliability, a lot of credibility associated with their name. But their strategies would have to be so dynamic and adaptable, because Tatas are catering to bottom of the pyramid, but they're also catering to middle income segment, and in some cases, the higher income segment as well. So you see how they have to adapt their strategy based on how the, you know, basic good is there, but the features have to be different, the strategy has to be different, the messaging has to be different. So for example, Sumitomo Chemicals, when they were trying to sell their insecticide, mosquito treated nets in parts of Africa, which is a very, very relevant product, because in those areas, malaria is so prevalent. They had hit a lot of resistance, because, and they didn't really succeed too much initially, because there was lack of awareness of malaria. Also, people did not want the headache of these putting up these nets and at night and taking off these nets, and sleeping under these nets felt very, very hot for them. So you see how understanding of what are the resistance areas there would have gone very, very far in countering these challenges right from the start itself. Now, we saw in the Seva example how your cooperative model works. So likewise, you have the corporations in Spain, the Mondragon Corporation, which is a federation of workers. When we talk about Lijjat Papad, we will see how this cooperation and community model works and helps social enterprise and scaling up of the beneficiaries at a much wider scale. Now, you could have a cross-subsidization model. I was giving the example of Tom's Shoes, which donates one pair to a needy child every time a pair of shoes is bought. So different models are adopted. There are times when there is a certain company which says, every time you purchase our product, we do, educate, we invest in educating a child, or every time you buy a product, we go and plant one tree for, your purchase. So these cross collaborative, cross subsidization models can also really help social enterprise. Now, of course, there are various, when we are talking about social franchise model, bringing about wellness, health, wellness care, I just gave you an example in terms of, those malaria nets, which did not, preventive nets, which did not work well. Likewise, we have an opposite example, which did work well, which is by SC Johnson, where again they were trying to sell these products, sprays, etc., these mosquito repellent products for in parts of Africa. And while initially there was resistance in terms of purchasing those products because of lack of awareness or distribution issues, later this was combated and made into a successful model because one, direct to home sales was started, training was given to the direct to the distribution network people, and also very importantly, the sales of these repellents, which were being sold, were typically clubbed with other products like room fresheners or various other products which would have been bought in any case. So as a basket, these products get purchased and used. And also very importantly, that because the cost sensitivity is so high among this segment, product was put in a refillable pack. So once purchased, the package did not have to be thrown. You could go back and have the package refilled. So refill packs were, it was sold in refill packs, which was very, very well received because it saved the cost of that package purchasing and led to multiple uses. Then there were subscription models, pricing subscription models, which were introduced, loyalty points which were introduced, all of which led to this being received very well. So you see how understanding and adapting led to the success of a concept, anti-malaria concept, versus where it did not actually get received very well. So likewise, if you look at French company Essilor, they had a project in India where they were trying to take eye clinics to the bottom of the pyramid. They were trying to reach 6,000 rural villages with these vans to take mobile clinics, eye clinics, to the bottom of the pyramid. But unfortunately, the cost recovery was so bad that the recovery from this could not even recover the cost per van which they were incurring, which was $40,000 to $50,000. Which eventually made this project unviable, and plans to scale up have been stalled. Now, possibly in the business model here, maybe more awareness could be created at the grassroots level so that there could be a tiered system of pricing, maybe tie-ups with some other collaborative partners for logistics could be brought in, maybe training, maybe some other kind of communication. Of course, one can keep analyzing, but here again an example of a noble idea, but obviously something in the business model didn't fit, which is why it could not be sustained. Now likewise, you have in Sri Lanka, which is again one of our neighbors, you have a very large distribution network for mobile services. However, for a long time, it was observed that in the rural areas, people were not very open to availing mobile services. There were various reasons. One, they didn't know all the range of features. Secondly, people in villages prefer to be a little among nature, laid back, a little cut off. When we know how connected we are to our phones and we are constantly connected, there is no time when we are disconnected now that we have phones. And this concept of constantly being connected in, clued in, maybe was not very well received. And awareness on the entire range of features, whether it's payments, whether it's other facilities, was not there. So these intermediaries were trained. Local people who were trained to go out and provide this information so that the villagers really understood how beneficial these mobile services can be for them, over and above just taking away their privacy and creating connectivity, how they can help them in so many other ways. So that is when the appreciation and the appetite for these mobile services went up significantly. In the case of Seva, we saw how community development model really helped the help act as a catalyst to incentivize the eventual beneficiaries to participate. Now, a hybrid model, you know, in the case of Arvind Eye Care, we'll be talking about it in more detail. You know, a very, very credible organization, how they have a tiered system where, you know, they have catered to the low income group. And then also in terms of how they employ the doctors, appealing to their social, you know, consciousness, giving them exposure in terms of more surgeries, etc. So balancing the financial and the social impact are effective hybrid models. So, for example, Pepsi company. We know Pepsi as the, you know, the giant MNC conglomerate where we get we have our beverages. But also Pepsi noticed, you know, that yes, they have this commercial model, but they observed that in India, women and especially young girls have iron deficiency. We know that in India, a lot of women have low hemoglobin iron deficiency. So they created this brand of cookies called Iron Chusti, Leher Iron Chusti. Pepsi used to be Leher Pepsi, if you remember. So, through understanding and research, you know, these were made available, and also they kept on adapting the flavor based on the understanding. So while you have this strong business profit driven organization, you also have them tailoring to something which is a need which can improve the social state and the state, you know, health of a large segment of young women. Now, another form of, you know, your franchise model, your tie-up model, could be your collaborative model, could be your, we have spoken about SKS Finance, the micro-lending organization. And they had a project where Bajaj Allianz, the insurance company, tied up with SKS Microfinance, and they reached out to the husbands of the women borrowers of SKS. So they reached out to the husbands of these women, offering them low-cost insurance policies. So that is, again, you see a collaborative model, a resource-sharing model, which is benefiting, of course, the SKS and Bajaj Allianz, but also it is benefiting the husband of this woman, where insurance becomes very vital, especially in the low income group, because you know, the man being the main bread earner most of the times, God forbid if something happens to him, then insurance can really, really help to support his dependents. Having a diversity of revenue streams through, you know, multiple tie-ups, multiple avenues is, of course, a very, very, you know, helpful way, where we are seeing constantly how organizations, whether it's a Patagonia or, you know, it's a any other organization, where having a strong financial book definitely helps to scale up your organization, demonstrating what you have achieved on the social front definitely helps to draw in more stakeholders. And of course, in this day and age, we have to keep talking about technology, and going forward in various chapters, I'm going to be talking about a lot of other technology-enabled social enterprises which have been helping financial sustainability. Raising funds for social enterprise is definitely very vital. Once again, I will repeat that social enterprises should tap into multiple avenues. We'll be coming to a chapter dedicated to funding for social enterprises, but it would be wisest to tap into multiple sources so that you have some sort of freedom in terms of not being bogged down by financial considerations and being able to focus on your social agenda. Grants are one of the best ways to for social enterprises, because grants come without pressure of repayment, and hence have really, really helped social enterprises grow and become scalable. So definitely, it is one of the most desirable forms of funding for social enterprises. Now, when we're talking about funding, then we have to also look at bottom of the pyramid, where corporations themselves are undertaking the projects themselves, or then enabling social and or enabling other social enterprises to undertake those projects. So, for example, Unilever has its own socially relevant, socially impactful projects, and at the same time also has collaborations like the Transform Hub to promote and to sustain support other social enterprises. So this consciousness of bottom of the pyramid is there in organizations, even their product developments, etc. A lot of that is done in response to this bottom of the pyramid. So, for example, you have Godrej Appliances. We are familiar with their fridges all over the place. Now, think of rural India where power supply is not very consistent, where you have one third of food is being wasted because of proper cooling facilities not being there. So they came up with Chotu Cool, which is a small fridge, a mini fridge, where one, they eliminated the compressor. So by eliminating the compressor, the need for power supply went away. It's a battery operated fridge. They use this cooling microchip to enhance the effectivity. They reduced its weight because of the compressor going out. The weight of the fridge got reduced substantially. The costing of the fridge reduced substantially. And it led to an immense reduction in food wastage because of high temperatures in the rural areas. And Chotu Cool is one of the major success stories, still exists across rural India, and various versions of that have been coming up. Likewise, if you see HUL in India, when they were launched their Pureit water filters, then again there was years of research modifying their filters, which went into play. And not only did they create a product which would be cost effective and, you know, very, very effective from the filtering point of view, but they also realized that to market it to bottom of the pyramid and to the middle income, they would require a workforce which is more grassroots and can do it direct to home. So what they did here was that they took their created a large force of direct to home people who could demonstrate this, trained them, gave them employment, trained them, ensured that, you know, there is this skill upgradation which is happening, and then sent their this demonstration workforce into the marketplace. And of course, Pureit was a huge hit. In the first year of launch itself, it sold more than 1 million units and has been selling since. So when we're talking about fundraising, organizations themselves, you know, create products and services for social impact. And at the same time, they also support other startups and smaller enterprises from to ensure that they also get to scale the potential for their socially impactful idea. Now, also coming to another collaboration, another model where a corporate used a very innovative support model to promote its business. We know Lafarge, and Lafarge in is a cement company. And what they noticed in, especially in some of the you know, areas where disposable income was not that high, that the competition for shelf space in retail stores to be able to sell their cement bags was very, very intense. So how do they stand out among the competition? So what they did was that they, in retail stores, they started putting up kiosks and trained people to become counselors. So these counselors would, people who came in to buy cement, who are obviously building a house or, you know, some sort of construction, and these counselors would counsel and guide these people on the right kind of, you know, designs, how to get financing, how to, you know, approach the right designers, architects, various things, give them guidance so that they became handholders and became collaborative, so that Lafarge stands out vis-a-vis the other cement company bags which are there on the shelf. So obviously the retail stores would give higher space to Lafarge versus the others. Also, they continued to handhold, these counselors continued to handhold beyond and monitored also to ensure that the financing, the various other elements were actually going towards the purpose for which the this whole association was being done between the counselors and the eventual beneficiaries. Again, employment model was very clearly demonstrated by your Danish, the Fan Milk Danish frozen foods company, where how they supported the local employment, how they trained these people with the bike vendors, over 25,000 bike vendors in the local region and became of West Africa, and became quite successful. Now for fee for service model. So imagine you have a service where you were doing it completely free, but offering it completely free. But at some point of time, you might need to generate income and charge so that you have some sustainability in terms of financial backing to be so that you can continue your operation. So the family center, which offers your checkups, you know, health checkups, they came up with a model where they allowed the first consultation to be free, and subsequently the subsequent consultations were paid at a nominal rate. So that is the way you could bring in people, by having a tiered system, you know, where you have some free, post that charging, or various layers of charging. Either you could do that as well. Now, coming back to innovation, which you cannot ignore, regardless of talking about the business element side of things, you have these P blocks, which one has, which were created by Vinish Desai. Now, what are P blocks? They are these construction material created from waste. Also, what he did was that he started creating water from kitchen vapors, etc. So now these P blocks are eco-friendly substitutes to construction material. Now, again, adapting even further, given what is going on in the in your ecosystem, and linking yourself to the market needs, he observed during the pandemic, we are all familiar with the PPEs, the protective equipment, and the amount of material that went into creating those. So post-pandemic, he started using PPEs and created his P-Block 2.0, which was again, you know, construction material, tiles, etc., out of this waste material, and good quality construction material, which is a substitute to your conventional construction material, which is maybe not even that eco-friendly. So there was a response to this market, that what market need, or what do we do with all this waste? You know, how do we use it effectively? And of course, we have seen, especially like in cities like Mumbai, we have seen the way construction has gone through the roof, which has adversely affected pollution, so many things, so many people are developing respiratory issues. If anyone can contribute to that, then of course, you know, that is an extremely desirable social impact. Now, as I mentioned, the family center, the Edmonton project, providing trauma, assistance, and especially to people with mental health issues. Now here it's a hybrid where the first consultation they gave for free, and then post that subsequently they started charging. So different models come into play. Now you have a paid forward model, like we were talking about Tom's Shoes, where purchases lead to donations elsewhere, which are so many other organizations use as well. So there are multiple strategies which can be used when it comes to the business model that a company wants to adopt. Various ideas that I've mentioned. I mentioned to you about the P blocks by Binish Desai. They have evolved over time using even the waste from the pandemic era. So many other projects are there where your social enterprise idea can be made extremely market relevant and can be linked to market need and consciousness at that point of time and make it very unique. So I'll also mention about another local Indian enterprise which has been getting massive press and which has worked on multiple levels, both from employment, from environment friendliness, and from various other elements. So the business strategy would have had to be extremely dynamic. Several of you may have heard of pool.co, which is pool as in flower.co, and they were a social enterprise started in Kanpur in India, in UP in India. And basically what they started doing was they started taking flower waste. We know flowers which are thrown into the Ganges, right? Flowers from temples thrown into the Ganges. So they started taking flower waste from the rivers and using them to create incenses, essential oils, etc. Now, this is creating a dual thing. One, it is cleaning the rivers. And secondly, it is creating products, employing women, local women from the disadvantaged sections, creating employment for them and creating a product which will earn revenue, which can be used to scale up the enterprise. Now, initially, there was a lot of resistance because this was something which was completely innovative. In a tier 2 city like Kanpur. Kanpur is not Mumbai, Delhi, etc. In a tier 2 city like Kanpur, innovation can, even if it's impacting the environment, there can be a lot of resistance. So it was looked down on, but it caught the eye of IIT Kanpur, who got involved. They incubated this project. Funding was received from other entities also. Angel Network became an investor, gave seed funding eventually. Though initially the entrepreneur started with just 72,000 rupees, but later on with support from IIT Kanpur, with support from ANI, all of these really, really helped pool.co grow. And they are growing really fast. Another very interesting thing is that most incense products in the market are charcoal based. Now, this is a healthy alternative, which is not only cleaning the rivers, but is also eco-friendly. Now, mostly incenses or agarbatti are priced, 10, 20 rupees. Consciously keeping the money side of the business in mind, what pool.co did was that they disrupted the market completely by pricing their incense at 150 rupees, in the range of 150 rupees versus 20 rupee products. Again, this was seen as challenging by a lot of the experts because why would people pay that much? But interestingly, because people want to contribute to the planet in their own way, because people want to contribute to a noble cause, bringing about employment, various other things, people want to contribute to cleaning of rivers, they want to contribute to non-charcoal based products. It is one of the fastest growing, incense brands, and they did very, very well, received very well, of course, as I'm talking about, with the investments and partnerships and collabs came publicity for this disruption, disruptive innovation. So a lot of PR, a lot of good press, And in fact, now they're also attempting, the founders are also considering disrupting the leather industry, which is a very, very, very fantastical and ambitious thought process. But why not give it a shot? And the idea originated when they saw a certain, you know, a certain a fluff forming around the flowers in their factory, and they want, and they are experimenting with whether that kind of fiber or fluff can be used to create some sort of eco leather. So let's see how that goes forward. But clearly one disruption has worked, one disruptive innovation has worked for them, and they are all set to, you know, consider others as well. So in India, social entrepreneurship is very, very, you know, is a hot topic, but at the same time, it comes with its challenges, whether infrastructure, whether mindset, whether technology, whether effective collaboration between government and, you know, your administration and the entrepreneurs. But there is huge potential to go and get it, go and create this impact. Various other disruptors, as we have been talking about, Arvind Eye Care, I just gave you details of Pool.co, I gave you details of Binish Desai's P Blocks and his eco-friendly ventures. All of these things are creating positive impact, which is being becoming scalable because it is being done in a manner with a very clear strategy and business in mind. They are not ignoring elements which are integral to the business strategy, because money is not a bad thing. As long as it helps the strategy and business and your scalability, it can be a very good support system to your social idea and your social goals. Goonj, I have spoken about, you know, uses discarded urban clothing. We have Selco for with the social, with the solar energy. So many ideas. There is no dearth of ideas in India. It has the largest number of social enterprises in the world, and growing every day. The number of contests, we'll see when we get into chapters on funding and various other things. The number of contests which are there, inviting ideas, the number of ideas which come in, the potential is absolutely phenomenal. So there are a lot of examples of women empowerment where I have already mentioned, but you have others like Barefoot College, you have Rang Sutra bringing artisans into the global fashion market. Remember now here, a very important element would be ensuring that the artisans are getting this exposure or access to the global market, where if you remember when we were discussing Seva, one of the conditions the women had to start associating with Seva was that please give us access to the market. We don't want to be bridging that gap on our own. So it has to be a collaborative effort, which has to be tailor-made to the need of the community that you are working with. Challenges are anything from funding, awareness, mindsets. But at the same time, there is a lot of CSR happening. There's Niti Aayog, Startup India, AIM. We're going to be talking about a lot of these in the coming chapters when we're talking about funding and other support systems. Thank you.